Continue under the theme of insight and do one more sutta with sort of non-self as the theme. Atsavati. There the Blessed One uttered this inspired utterance. It might not be, and it might not be for me. It will not be, and it will not be for me. Resolving thus, a bhikkhu can cut off the lower fetters. You know, that needs a bit of explanation. That verse was a verse at the time of the Buddha, which was more in line with the annihilationists, the nihilists, that philosophically, and then the Buddha sort of twisted it a little bit to put it into more of a Buddhist context, and saying the Buddha uttered this inspired utterance because he was aroused by powerful joy while reviewing the emancipating nature of the teaching. And then the formula for resolution recommended by the Buddha occurs in the suttas in two versions, one used by the annihilationists, the other the Buddha's adaptation of this. And as the two versions differ only with respect to two verb forms, they're sometimes confounded in the various recensions. And he said, from the commentarial glosses, it appears that the confusion had already set in before the age of the commentaries. So the readings also differ among several editions of the same text. The annihilationist version, explicitly identified as Uccheda Ditti, and classified among wrong views. And the Buddha described this creed as the highest of outside speculative views. The reason being that one who accepts such a view will not be attracted to existence, nor averse to the cessation of existence. It is problem. And then the Buddha transformed this formula into a theme for contemplation, consonant with his own teaching, by replacing the first person verbs with their third person counterparts. So the change of person shifts the stress from the view of self, implicit in the annihilationist version, sort of I will be annihilated. What is it? Rather than it might not be and it might not be for you, sort of I will not be is how the annihilationists use it. To an impersonal perspective that harmonizes with the anatta doctrine. Said in the present sutta, the resolving on the formula is said to culminate in the destruction of the five lower fetters, that is the stage of non-returning. Elsewhere. And said also that it may be significant that in the Nikayas, because this verse comes up in actually many different suttas in different places in the, not just say in the Samyutta Nikaya, it comes up in other Nikayas as well. The precise meaning of the formula is never explicated. There's never ever an explanation of it. Which suggests it may have functioned as an open-ended guide to reflection to be filled in by the meditator through personal intuition. And there's lots here on grammar, polygrammar. So it's like 2.5 pages of commentary on that. And then the. Okay. So the Buddha utters this inspired utterance. It might not be, and it might not be for me. It will not be, and it will not be for me. Resolving thus, a bhikkhu can cut off the lower fetters. When this was said, a certain bhikkhu said to the Blessed One, but how, Venerable Sir, can a bhikkhu, resolving thus, it might not be and it might not be for me, it will not be and it will not be for me, cut off the lower fetters? Here, Bhikkhu, an uninstructed worldling who is not a seer of the noble ones regards form as self. And then through all those form as self, self as in self as in form as in self, all through the five khandhas, or self as in consciousness. He does not understand as it really is, impermanent form as impermanent form, impermanent feeling as impermanent feeling, impermanent perception as impermanent perception, impermanent volitional formations as impermanent volitional formations, impermanent consciousness as impermanent consciousness. He does not understand as it really is, painful form as painful form, painful feeling as painful feeling, painful perception as painful perception, painful volitional formations as painful volitional formations, painful consciousness as painful consciousness. He does not understand as it really is, selfless form as selfless form, selfless feeling as selfless feeling, selfless perception as selfless perception, selfless volitional formations as selfless volitional formations, selfless consciousness as selfless consciousness. He does not understand as it really is, conditioned form as conditioned form, conditioned feeling as conditioned feeling, conditioned perception as conditioned perception, conditioned volitional formations as conditioned volitional formations, conditioned consciousness as conditioned consciousness. He does not understand as it really is, form will be exterminated, feeling will be exterminated, perception will be exterminated, volitional formations will be exterminated, consciousness will be exterminated. The instructed noble disciple Bhikkhu, who is a seer of noble ones, does not regard form as self, and does not regard through the whole series or self as in consciousness. He understands as it really is, impermanent form as impermanent form, impermanent feeling as impermanent feeling, impermanent perception as impermanent perception, impermanent volitional formations as impermanent volitional formations, impermanent consciousness as impermanent consciousness. He understands as it really is, painful form as painful form, painful feeling as painful feeling, painful perception as painful perception, painful volitional formations as painful volitional formations, painful consciousness as painful consciousness. He understands as it really is, selfless form as selfless form, selfless feeling as selfless feeling, selfless perception as selfless perception, selfless volitional formations as selfless volitional formations, selfless consciousness as selfless consciousness. He understands as it really is, conditioned form as conditioned form, conditioned feeling as conditioned feeling, conditioned perception as conditioned perception, conditioned volitional formations as conditioned volitional formations, conditioned consciousness as conditioned consciousness. He understands as it really is, form will be exterminated, feeling will be exterminated, perception will be exterminated, volitional formations will be exterminated, consciousness will be exterminated. With the extermination of form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, that bhikkhu, resolving thus, it might not be and it might not be for me, it will not be and it will not be for me, can cut off the lower fetters. Resolving thus, Venerable Sir, a bhikkhu can cut off the lower fetters. But how should one know, how should one see, for the immediate destruction of the taints to occur? Here, bhikkhu, the uninstructed worldling becomes frightened over an unfrightening matter. For this is frightening to the uninstructed worldling. It might not be, and it might not be for me. It will not be, and it will not be for me. But the instructed noble disciple does not become frightened over an unfrightening matter. For this is not frightening to the noble disciple. It might not be, and it might not be for me. It will not be, and it will not be for me. Consciousness, bhikkhu, while standing, might stand engaged with form, engaged with feeling, engaged with perception, engaged with volitional formations. based upon volitional formations, established upon, so that goes through the whole. Okay. Consciousness, bhikkhu, while standing, might stand engaged with form. Based upon form, established upon form, with a sprinkling of delight, it might come to growth, increase, and expansion. Consciousness, bhikkhu, while standing, might stand engaged with feeling. Based upon feeling, established upon feeling, with a sprinkling of delight, it might come to growth, increase, and expansion. Consciousness, bhikkhu, while standing, might stand engaged with perception. Based upon perception, established upon perception, with a sprinkling of delight, it might come to growth, increase, and expansion. Consciousness, bhikkhu, while standing, might stand engaged with volitional formations. Based upon volitional formations, established upon volitional formations, with a sprinkling of delight, it might come to growth, increase, and expansion. Bhikkhu, though someone might say, apart from form, apart from feeling, apart from perception, apart from volitional formations, I will make known the coming and going of consciousness, its passing away and rebirth, its growth, increase, and expansion. That is impossible. Bhikkhu, if a bhikkhu has abandoned lust for the form element, with the abandoning of lust, the basis is cut off. There is no support for the establishing of consciousness. If he has abandoned lust for the feeling element, with the abandoning of lust, the basis is cut off. There is no support for the establishing of consciousness. If he has abandoned lust for the perception element, with the abandoning of lust, the basis is cut off. There is no support for the establishing of consciousness. Bhikkhu, if a bhikkhu has abandoned lust for the volitional formations element, with the abandoning of lust, the basis is cut off. There is no support for the establishing of consciousness. Bhikkhu, if a bhikkhu has abandoned lust for the consciousness element, with the abandoning of lust, the basis is cut off. There is no support for the establishing of consciousness. When that consciousness is unestablished, not coming to growth, non-generative, it is liberated. By being liberated, it is steady. By being steady, it is content. By being content, he is not agitated. Being unagitated, he personally attains nibbana. He understands, destroyed is birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done, there is no more for this state of being. It is, bhikkhu, for one who knows thus, for one who sees thus, that the immediate destruction of the taints occurs. There's also a footnote on that when the instructed noble disciple does not become frightened over an unfrightening matter. It says, the worldling becomes frightened with the arising of weak insight, for he cannot overcome self-love, and thus he becomes afraid, thinking, now I will be annihilated and won't exist anymore. He sees himself falling into an abyss. But when strong insight occurs to the instructed noble disciple, he doesn't become frightened, but thinks, it is formations only that arise, formations only that cease. And then the sub-commentary, when the good worldling sees with a knowledge of appearance as fearful that formations are fearful, he doesn't become afraid. And knowledge of appearance as fearful is an advanced stage of insight knowledge which lays bare the fearful nature of formations in all three periods of time. That's from Visuddhimagga. Past, present, and future. Okay. Next sutta, as we go through the insight aspects, Majjhima 11, the shorter discourse on the lion's roar. Thus have I heard, On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus." "Venerable sir," they replied, "the Blessed One said this, 'Bhikkhus, only here is there a recluse, only here a second recluse, only here a third recluse, only here a fourth recluse. The doctrines of others are devoid of recluses. That is how you should rightly roar your lion's roar.' It is possible, bhikkhus, that wanderers of other sects might ask, 'But on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Venerable Ones say thus?' Wanderers of other sects who ask thus may be answered in this way. Friends, four things have been declared to us by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. On seeing these in ourselves, we say thus, 'Only here is there a recluse, only here a second recluse, only here a third recluse, only here a fourth recluse.' The doctrines of others are devoid of recluses." That's referring to Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, Arahant. What are the four? We have four things have been declared. What are the four? We have confidence in the teacher. We have confidence in the Dhamma. We have fulfilled the precepts. And our companions in the Dhamma are dear and agreeable to us, whether they are laymen or those gone forth. These are the four things declared to us by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, on seeing which in ourselves we say as we do. It is possible, bhikkhus, that wanderers of other sects might say thus, "Friends, we too have confidence in the teacher, that is, in our teacher. We too have confidence in the Dhamma, that is, in our Dhamma. We too have fulfilled the precepts, that is, our precepts. And our companions in the Dhamma are dear and agreeable to us, whether they are laymen or those gone forth." What is the distinction here, friends? What is the variance? What is the difference between you and us? Wanderers of other sects who ask thus may be answered in this way. How then, friends, is the goal one or many? Answering rightly, the wanderers of other sects would answer thus. Friends, the goal is one, not many. But friends, is that goal for one affected by lust or free from lust? Answering rightly, the wanderers of other sects would answer thus. Friends, that goal is for one free from lust, not for one affected by lust. But friends, is that goal for one affected by hate or free from hate? Answering rightly, they would answer, friends, that goal is for one free from hate, not for one affected by hate. But friends, is that goal for one affected by delusion or free from delusion? Answering rightly, they would answer, friends, that goal is for one free from delusion, not for one affected by delusion. But friends, is that goal for one affected by craving or free from craving? Answering rightly, they would answer, friends, that goal is for one free from craving, not for one affected by craving. But friends, is that goal for one affected by clinging or free from clinging? Answering rightly, they would answer, friends, that goal is for one free from clinging, not for one affected by clinging. But friends, is that goal for one who has vision or for one without vision? Answering rightly, they would answer, friends, that goal is for one with vision, not for one without vision. But friends, is that goal for one who favors and opposes or for one who does not favor and oppose? Answering rightly, they would answer, friends, that goal is for one who does not favor and oppose, not for one who favors and opposes. But friends, is that goal for one who delights in and enjoys proliferation, or for one who does not delight in and enjoy proliferation? Answering rightly, they would answer, friends, that goal is for one who does not delight in and enjoy proliferation, not for one who delights in and enjoys proliferation. Because there are these two views, the view of being and the view of non-being. Any recluses or Brahmins who rely on the view of being, adopt the view of being, accept the view of being, are opposed to the view of non-being. Any recluses or Brahmins who rely on the view of non-being, adopt the view of non-being, accept the view of non-being, are opposed to the view of being. Any recluses or Brahmins who do not understand as they actually are the origin, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape, in the case of these two views, are affected by lust, affected by hate, affected by delusion, affected by craving, affected by clinging, without vision, given to favoring and opposing, and they delight in and enjoy proliferation. They are not freed from birth, aging, and death, from sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. They are not freed from suffering, I say. Any recluses or Brahmins who understand as they actually are the origin, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape, in the case of these two views, are without lust, without hate, without delusion, without craving, without clinging, with vision, not given to favoring and opposing, and they do not delight in and enjoy proliferation. They are freed from birth, aging, and death, from sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. They are freed from suffering, I say. Bhikkhus, there are these four kinds of clinging. What for? Clinging to sensual pleasures, clinging to views, clinging to rules and observances, and clinging to a doctrine of self. Though certain recluses and Brahmins claim to propound the full understanding of all kinds of clinging, they do not completely describe the full understanding of all kinds of clinging. They describe the full understanding of clinging to sensual pleasures without describing the full understanding of clinging to views, clinging to rules and observances, and clinging to a doctrine of self. Why is that? Those good recluses and Brahmins do not understand these three instances of clinging as they actually are. Therefore, though they claim to propound the full understanding of all kinds of clinging, they describe only the full understanding of clinging to sensual pleasures, without describing the full understanding of clinging to views, clinging to rules and observances, and clinging to a doctrine of self. Though certain recluses and Brahmins claim to propound the full understanding of all kinds of clinging, they describe the full understanding of clinging to sensual pleasures and clinging to views, without describing the full understanding of clinging to rules and observances and clinging to a doctrine of self. Why is that? They do not understand two instances. Therefore, they describe only the full understanding of clinging to sensual pleasures and clinging to views, without describing the full understanding of clinging to rules and observances and clinging to a doctrine of self. Though certain recluses and Brahmins claim to propound the full understanding of all kinds of clinging, they describe the full understanding of clinging to sensual pleasures, clinging to views, and clinging to rules and observances, without describing the full understanding of clinging to a doctrine of self. They do not understand one instance. Therefore, they describe only the full understanding of clinging to sensual pleasures, clinging to views, and clinging to rules and observances, without describing the full understanding of clinging to a doctrine of self. Because in such a Dhamma and discipline as that, it is plain that confidence in the teacher is not rightly directed, that confidence in the Dhamma is not rightly directed, that fulfillment of the precepts is not rightly directed, and that the affection among companions in the Dhamma is not rightly directed. Why is that? Because that is how it is when the Dhamma and discipline is badly proclaimed and badly expounded, unemancipating, unconducive to peace, expounded by one who is not fully enlightened. Bhikkhus, when a Tathagata, accomplished and fully enlightened, claims to propound the full understanding of all kinds of clinging, he completely describes the full understanding of all kinds of clinging. He describes the full understanding of clinging to sensual pleasures, clinging to views, clinging to rules and observances, and clinging to a doctrine of self. Bhikkhus, in such a Dhamma and discipline as that, it is plain that confidence in the teacher is rightly directed, that confidence in the Dhamma is rightly directed, that fulfillment of the precepts is rightly directed, and that the affection among companions in the Dhamma is rightly directed. Why is that? Because that is how it is when the Dhamma and discipline is well proclaimed and well expounded, emancipating, conducive to peace, expounded by one who is fully enlightened. Now these four kinds of clinging have what as their source, what is their origin, from what are they born and produced? These four kinds of clinging have craving as their source, craving as their origin. They are born and produced from craving. Craving has what as its source? Craving has feeling as its source. Feeling has what as its source? Feeling has contact as its source. Contact has what as its source? Contact has the sixfold base as its source. The sixfold base has what as its source? The sixfold base has mentality, materiality as its source. Mentality, materiality has what as its source? Mentality, materiality has consciousness at its source. Consciousness has what as its source? Consciousness has formations at its source. Formations have what as their source? Formations have ignorance as their source, ignorance as their origin. They are born and produced from ignorance. Bhikkhus, when ignorance is abandoned and true knowledge has arisen in a bhikkhu, then with the fading away of ignorance and the rising of true knowledge, he no longer clings to sensual pleasures, no longer clings to views, no longer clings to rules and observances, no longer clings to a doctrine of self. When he does not cling, he is not agitated. When he is not agitated, he personally attains nibbana. He understands birth is destroyed, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done, there is no more coming to any state of being. That is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So that crux of the view of being and the view of non-being, kind of the matrix of the of how the stances, the various stances arise. It's bhava ditti and vibhava ditti. As opposed to, say, ucheta ditti and sasada ditti. Ucheta ditti and sasada ditti are more sort of on a cosmological level. And the bhava ditti and vibhava ditti are more on the moment-to-moment mind arising of what's arising in the mind. Ucheda ditti and sasada ditti. Ucheda ditti is annihilationist view, and sasada ditti is eternalist view. Becoming being. Okay, another sutta that highlights sort of views or no views. Anguttara 10, sutta number 93. I've heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying near Savati in Jeta's Grove, Anattapindika's monastery. Then Anattapindika, the householder, left Savati in the middle of the day to see the Blessed One. But the thought then occurred to him, now is not the right time to see the Blessed One, for he is in seclusion, and it is not the right time to see the mind-developing monks, for they too are in seclusion. Why don't I visit the park of the wanderers of other persuasions? So he headed to the park of the wanderers of other persuasions. Now on that occasion the wanderers of other persuasions had come together in a gathering and were sitting, discussing many kinds of bestial topics, making a great noise and racket. They saw Anattapindika, the householder, coming from afar, and on seeing him hushed one another. Be quiet, good sirs, don't make any noise. Here comes Anattapindika, the householder, a disciple of the contemplative Gotama. He is one of those disciples of the contemplative Gotama, clad in white, who lives in Savati. These people are fond of quietude, trained in quietude, and speak in praise of quietude. Maybe if he perceives our group is quiet, he will consider it worth his while to come our way. So the wanderers fell silent. Then Anattapindika, the householder, went to where the wanderers of other persuasions were staying. On arrival, he greeted them courteously. After an exchange of friendly greetings and courtesies, he sat to one side. As he was sitting there, the wanderer said to him, "Tell us, householder, what views the contemplative Gotama has."
"Venerable sirs,
I don't know entirely what views the Blessed One has."
"Well, well, so you don't know entirely what views the contemplative Gotama has. Then tell us what views the monks have."
"I don't even know entirely what views the monks have."
"So you don't know entirely what views the contemplative Gotama has, or even that the monks have. Then tell us what views you have."
"It wouldn't be difficult for me to expound to you what views I have, but please let the Venerable Ones expound each in line with his position, and then it won't be difficult for me to expound to you what views I have."
When this had been said, one of the wanderers said to Anathapindika, the householder, "The cosmos is eternal. Only this is true. Anything otherwise is worthless. This is the sort of view I have."
Another wanderer said to Anathapindika, "The cosmos is not eternal. Only this is true. Anything else is worthless. This is the sort of view I have."
And various wanderers expound various views. "The cosmos is finite," or "the cosmos is infinite." "The soul and the body are the same." "The soul is one thing and the body another." "After death, a Tathagata exists."
"After death, a Tathagata does not exist."
"After death, a Tathagata both does and does not exist."
"After death, a Tathagata neither does nor does not exist."
"Only this is true. Anything otherwise is worthless. This is the sort of view I have."
When this had been said, Anathapindika, the householder, said to the wanderers, "As for the Venerable One who says, the cosmos is eternal, only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless, this is the sort of view I have, his view arises from his own inappropriate attention or in dependence on the words of another. Now this view has been brought into being, is fabricated, will, dependently originated. Whatever has been brought into being is fabricated, willed, dependently originated, that is inconstant. Whatever is inconstant is stress. This Venerable One thus adheres to that very stress, submits himself to that very stress." And similarly for the other positions. When this had been said, the wanderer said to Anathapindika, the householder, I think that's out of place. "Whatever has been brought into being is fabricated, will, dependently originated, that is inconstant. Whatever is inconstant is stress. Whatever is stress is not me, is not what I am, is not myself. This is the sort of view I have."
"So, householder, whatever has been brought into being is fabricated, will, dependently originated, that is inconstant. Whatever is inconstant is stress. You thus adhere to that very stress, submit yourself to that very stress."
"Venerable sirs, whatever has been brought into being is fabricated, will, dependently originated, that is inconstant. Whatever is inconstant is stress. Whatever is stress is not me, is not what I am, is not myself. Having seen this well with right discernment as it actually is present, I also discern the higher escape from it as it actually is present." When this was said, the wanderers fell silent, abashed, sitting with their shoulders drooping, their heads down, brooding, at a loss for words. Anathapindika, the householder, perceiving that the wanderers were silent, at a loss for words, got up and went to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down to the Blessed One, he sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he told the Blessed One the entirety of his conversation with the wanderers. Blessed One said, "Well done, householder, well done. That is how you should periodically and righteously refute those foolish men." Then he instructed, urged, roused, and encouraged Anathapindika the householder with a talk on Dhamma. When Anathapindika the householder had been instructed, urged, roused, and encouraged by the Blessed One with a talk on Dhamma, he got up from his seat and, having bowed to the Blessed One, left, keeping the Blessed One on his right side. Not long afterward, the Blessed One addressed the monks. Monks, even a monk who has long penetrated the Dhamma in this Dhamma and Vinaya would do well periodically and righteously to refute the wanderers of other persuasions in just the way Anattapindika, the householder, has done. I doubt it. I don't think so. There, the Buddha, on many occasions, came down on the monks quite heavily for wasting their time and useless talk. I don't think he's advocating going around and correcting everybody's views, but I mean that's just the nature of Indian society, that as soon as you get two people together, they get into a philosophical discussion. To be able to actually use sort of logic which is appropriate with the Dhamma to do that, to deal with that discussion and deal with that situation. I mean, India is probably a kind of a unique society, I think, anyway, in its sort of tradition of philosophical debate the very first discourse of the first book of discourses, the Digha Nikayas, immediately the Buddha starts laying out the 62 different philosophical views that were held by various philosophers at the time. So it's amazing propensity for proliferation. Well, that's the whole point, is that that's the whole function of satta, it's based on faith, and you can't you rely on somebody else, and until you're fully enlightened, then you can't verify that for 100% that this is an unconditioned view or unconditioned result. You can, and also that the sense that the Buddha is bringing it back to, on a practical sense, you know, when the Buddha talks about transcendent right view, he uses the four noble truths as the basis, so that you're looking at what is suffering and what is a cause of suffering, rather than the view that is being held. Because you take a view that is okay, the cosmos is eternal, and you have to rely on that's passed on knowledge or something. Whereas the sense of suffering is coming. That's something you can experience. That's something you can start to investigate. As where does that arise from? How does one free oneself from it? So that's what is the basis of a transcendent. But you can't really verify that completely until you have experienced liberation yourself. So you rely on faith and satta, but it's a vehicle for. That's also why that, say, satta, faith, is always put in a context of spiritual faculties or spiritual powers. Faith is what is supported, needs to be supported by effort. And also that faith that it isn't giving rise to effort is then not sort of fulfilling its function. So it has a function rather than it doesn't stand alone. Make sense?
Sadhu.